Hello, Cules. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm your host, Gabriel Quiroga, here in the Spanish capital. Hope everyone had a festive Thanksgiving, especially friends in the United States. On today's show, we have Dom Kastanich, who's head of Barca Football Substack, as we do a tactical analysis of last night's match and the first two matches of Xavi. Really quick, just want to talk about Xavi's tenure so far, his early tenure. And I just want to talk about the stability of the club when it happens, when you don't have to worry about the hiring and firing of this new coach. Now, Xavi has come in, and as I commented in a Barca Talk Cafe last week, it's been really slow, but in a nice way. In our discussions in our WhatsApp group and just reading things online, it's been mainly about football and tactical analysis, which has been kind of refreshing, as opposed to all the drama that goes on in the background. Now, it's amazing what bringing Xavi has done in the last week here. Again, just I really haven't heard anything from Laporta. Haven't heard anything about from the board, which has been a nice change, especially when Koeman was in charge, the back and forth that was happening, the leaks in the press, and so forth. Now, I've been really satisfied with what I've seen from Xavi so far. I think the team is definitely trending up. Now, these games are going to be always difficult because we are still trying to find our footing. The team is young, especially, for example, against Benfica. We weren't able to score a goal, but overall, the games are definitely more entertaining. For example, last night at Villarreal, I thought the first half went really quickly. And again, I'm always going to be a fan of possession, but possession with teeth, right? Again, before, you know, especially under Koeman, the last year of Valverde and Quique Setién, we had possession, but we didn't have the teeth or the verticality. Last night's match, I thought, was a great win, especially because Estadio Cerámica is such a tough place to play. And Villarreal have been kind of struggling. Again, they played against Manchester United in the Champions League. They had some opportunities, and they lost. Again, they're a tough team. They're a senior team, just like Espanyol, for example. And to get these 3 points, that's why Xavi celebrated. Because, again, every positive step with the youth of this midfield and the youth players like Abde and Araujo is a step forward. It's about maturing. It's about coming together. It's about understanding how to be a professional La Liga player. And again, these are the things that Xavi can instill because he was one of the best football players recently, right? So he understands what's going on with social media. He understands the demands of what it is to be a Barca player. And I think you're seeing that already. Again, the way he's able to communicate. We're seeing glimpses of De Jong playing that much better. We're seeing Abde coming out of nowhere and being a winger. Like as I talk with Dom here, doesn't the attacking trio of Fati, Memphis, and Abde excite you? I mean, it excites me, especially seeing Abde, what he's been able to do on the right side, and he's just going to get better with more playing time. It just always happens. Again, we still have our problems on defense, but I think overall we are trending up. We have a week here to recover, so hopefully the team can get better fitness because, again, we are starting strong, but we're getting that bajón, right, around the 40th, 30th minute, as we saw last night, and again in the second half as well. So that will come in time. But, again, I'm really excited about this team. This team excites me more. Seeing the youth, man, again, seeing the midfield of Nico, Gavi, you know, Pedri, who's going to come back, De Jong. I mean, man, we are so lucky to just recycle this team like this so quickly. Look at other teams, like, for example, Tottenham, who went to the Champions League final just a couple years ago. They are still trying to find their feet. You know, they're unable to find these youth players that we continually just find under rocks in Barcelona, apparently. So anyway, I'm definitely excited for the trend that we're going. Again, all these matches that we have are always going to be complicated. They just are. We're just not the Barca as we used to. Again, we're going to have a big Champions League match at Bayern. Again, we need to get points. We need to win to qualify, and that's going to be a huge ask, especially with what is Bayern going to do. Anyway, some quick Barca Talk admin notes. I am going on vacation tomorrow, and I don't return until the following week. So the next broadcast is going to be Barca Talk Cafe next Friday the 9th, I believe that is. Also, if you're looking for a fun group to join, our WhatsApp group is a lot of fun. To be part of that, join our Patreon community. It's only $5 a month. Get all that information on our website. The link is in the show notes. After the break, Dom and I break down Xavi's tenure so far, tactically. All right, so last night at the Estadio Ceramica, Barca finally got their first road victory of the season. Wow, we're in the end of November, which I can't believe. And one of the things that stood out to me last night, obviously getting the 3 points was crucial. It wasn't the typical Barca match. But Dom, you're here because now you're my tactical guy. I love it. I love your newsletter so much. It brings Thank me you. So much joy. But let's start off first with the first three matches. You know, last time you were on, I had you on prior to Xavi coming in, and now we have three matches. What are your kind of overall impressions so far of what Xavi's doing tactically, like compared to Koeman?
Right. Well, there's quite a few changes, I would say, but very much as expected, mostly like high emphasis on possession, passing, domination, with varying success so far, of course. But I would say that like one of the major changes that we've seen so far is verticality. That's kind of the big thing, especially looking at that right side of Barca's attack. Hopefully the days of Sergio Roberto as a wing back or winger are long gone. And we see more of Abde or Dembele or Ilias, whoever is at the club come January moving forward. So having that natural winger with pace and trickery and just pure unpredictability is crucial for Barca, because they were generally a team that lacked any sort of outlets apart from Jordi Alba, which was a big thing. And this is interesting, too, because another big change Barca are seeing with Xavi is this asymmetry kind of. On the left side, you have width and verticality through Alba, while Gavi kind of starts out wide, then cuts inside. That's also the more technical and more possession and combination-oriented side. And on the right, you have a natural winger who provides width and verticality with a third centre-back or maybe an inverted full-back kind of covering behind him. And that side is more about isolation, directness, one versus one duels. So yeah, I would say that asymmetry and verticality, kind of the two novelties, I think that Xavi will persist on moving forward in the season.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I hope if we see something like last night with Abde playing, I hope we see more use of the right side in attack, because I think ultimately that is going to lead to the success of the attack, especially with Ansu coming back in the future. Now, in your last newsletter, you were talking about this plus one rule that Xavi implements. Can you tell us just a little bit more about this plus one rule, just for people who aren't aware of this?
Yeah, sure. So essentially, the plus one rule is very simple. It states that you only ever need one additional player to achieve superiority when trying to bypass the press or just trying to breach a defensive block. It doesn't really matter. Also means that Xavi won't really have a set structure in place, but rather he will adapt to the opposition. So let's take Villarreal, for example. They press in a variation of 4-4-2, which means that you'll have two forwards kind of marking the back line. Now, a nominal back four, for example, uses only two center backs and two fullbacks, and that means that you would essentially get a 2-2 duel in the back. However, if we follow the plus one rule, that means that Xavi will, in that case, drop an additional player in the back line to turn that into a 3-2 duel. So how he achieves that depends, and it can vary depending on the opposition, the situation. It can be done by deploying a third center back, for example. It can be done by having a fullback deep in the first phase of build-up. And it can be just instructing the pivot to drop into the back line, for example. The bottom line is the plus one rule adapts to the opposition. If they press with two players, you need three players. If they press with three players, you need four players. And if they just press with one, that you only need two center backs to achieve superiority, and that will suffice generally.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that's kind of always been kind of in the DNA recently, but I think it's been lost. I think it's been forgotten in this way, because I think we've been so happy with 80% possession that we haven't had to really deploy this. But now with the team being so young and not, for example, last night, we were pretty even with Villarreal at 50-50 possession. Having this idea is really cool because it's more dynamic. It's more adaptable to other oppositions, right? It's not just our system against our system, who's going to win out, especially with the team that we have in the town. I think that's really important. Now, again, under these three matches, you brought up a good point about the more verticality. And I think last night was something that Xavi really focused on with the verticality to really kind of unlock the attack. Because I think Mertens, as I've talked about in the last couple episodes and last time with you, he's been lost in the shuffle. And I think, especially as we saw last night, we have to just counter and go rather than hold and try to get numbers. Yeah. What did you see last night with that type of verticality? Did you see that more with Memphis a little bit more as the point man as opposed to that three attacking system?
I'll guess so. Well, Memphis is he's a tricky player because he has many qualities. Let's get that out of the way immediately. He can be used as a target man, even, you know, a decent target man. He has strength. He has pace. He has the trickery as well. He can beat a man which is good. But I think that he will mostly be used in that sort of a false nine role, something like that, because he likes to drop deep. He likes to create overloads on the left side of the pitch, which is, you know, receiving in the half space is kind of his strength as well. So I think generally if you pair him up with players like Abde on the right and maybe Ansu on the left, you can get the best out of him because he will drop deep, he will drag markers, and then he can do the layoffs into the space, into players that can actually that can offer that verticality, as Abde did, for example, last night, which was amazing to see. So I guess that would be the best way to use him. You need runners with him. He is a runner himself, but you need the runners with him. That's key.
Yeah, I just want him to go forward. You know, I think last night, especially on his second goal, where it was a long ball and it was the ability that he had to just not think,
of course,
just poach and go, right? And I think that's what we need more of him, because you know, the two things that drive me crazy watching football is, you know, as a former forward, is offsides and losing possession, right? Because I just know those are the two things that, you know, as a forward, you really have one base. That's like almost your primary job is just to keep in line, right? Because those are dead balls that are going the other way. And the other thing is losing possession. I think Memphis, you know, the prior two games, he was losing the ball way too loose, right? Last night, I think he had a better job. I still want to see a little bit more effort on the pressing, but I'll take his effort last night, especially with the goals. Now let's go talk about the midfield. We got a question here from one of our patrons, Ethan. And it's just basically, which system do you prefer if you kind of have to pick one? Is it the 3-back system or the 4-3-3? If you were just kind of going with what we have available right now, are you liking what you're seeing with the 3-back system or the 4-back? Is that, I mean, because that's essentially what it is. Because like you said, with this +1 rule, we're kind of just trying to flood the midfield and there's really no kind of quote unquote structure of the formation. It's really about the back line. So which one do you prefer? Do you prefer the 3-back or the 4-back?
Well, it depends. I would say that this 3-in-the-back system is working well. I think that the Barca's greatest strength lies in the midfield. So just having that flooded and having that superiority constantly in midfield is to our benefit, because that's where we will win matches. That's what Barca have been about, the midfield forever. So that kind of goes with the whole philosophy anyway. But I would say that if we can have domination through midfield, we're, you know, that our chances of winning matches will increase. Of course, you need to have finishers as well. You need to have the lethality, which we lack kind of. But I think that just having the emphasis on midfield with that 3-in-the-back system that kind of gives you the box, the 4 midfielders, I think that kind of works well. So far, it's still, the sample is very small still, but I think that it's going to work. It should work because the quality that we have in midfield is just, it's outrageous.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, it's kind of one of those things, you pick your poison, right? Because, you know, fundamentally in football, you're taught that 4-back is always going to be more sound, right? Because you have more balance. But with this Barca, I don't know if that's true, right? Because like you said, the midfield is our talent. They're young. They can run back on defense. Mm-hmm. I still, Dom, I'm, God, this right side just.
I know, yeah, I know. It's just,
let's try a diagnosis, because you know, I put a joke on Twitter. I was like, our right side hasn't been good since 2015, you know, when Dani Alves was still there. And I don't understand, like, we see it time and time again, other teams just barraging us on that right side, and we still cannot come up with anything. How do we workshop this? What do we do? I mean, I know, you know, just talking about the 3-back to the 4-back, but man, it's just like, I don't get it. We've had so many people on the right, you know, and we still can't solve it.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I remember that we used to have like Roberto and Samedo both on that right side. That was kind of the go-to plan to plug the holes, but it never really worked. Nothing works. I don't know. The thing is, I think this was always going to be the big issue, like just defensively, Barca defensively in general. Even with Xavi coming in, he was more of a, we'll rather concede 4 and score 5 than, you know, score 1 than defend deep kind of coach. But how can we get better defensively in general? It's tough. I mean, the issues Barcelona had defensively mostly related to their emphasis on high pressing, because they would press high, but they were not really efficient in it, right? So I think it still boils down to having a much improved in possession structure, because, you know, if that kind of lends itself nicely to a good counter pressing structure, then at least some of the issues would be gone. That's at least how I see it. It's just, you know, Barcelona defenders, or generally players out of possession, are more about awareness and stopping attacks before they turn into dangerous situations, you know, rather than just purely winning one versus one duels and foot races and stuff like that. So I think the best way is to perfect the in possession phase, and that structure gives us the best chance of retaining possession in the first place. And then if and when the ball is lost, to have a good chance of quickly transitioning into a good counter-pressing structure. I know it sounds kind of, I don't know, it's a lot, but I think that's our best shot. Just, I don't know.
It's one of those things where it's almost like Tetris, right? Where you pull one piece over here to adjust, and then the other part of the tower starts to fall on the other side.
Yeah.
But again, you know, like you said, I think that's a really good point, is that our defenders, when they don't have the ball, they're almost like in American football, like free safeties trying to read the play before it happens.
Exactly.
And that's where they were special, especially when Piqué was in his prime. I think that's one of his outstanding qualities that he had.
Yeah.
Again, you know, we saw in the midweek in the Champions with Araujo on the right side, I think he had a game. I think he was awesome on the right side. But again,
amazing.
With Araujo, it's all about, you know, injury. Again, last night, I thought he almost broke his leg, you know?
Yeah, it was scary. I don't know. That's a question. Now, where do you put him? Do you put him centrally, or do you put him out wide? Because if you put him centrally, you can kind of mask his in-possession deficiencies, because you want to have your best progressors out wide because they can access the half space, right? So if you have Eric Garcia on the right side and you have, I don't know, Longley or even Piqué on the left side, in theory, that gives you the best on-the-ball abilities. But then again, out wide is where the danger usually comes from. So you want to have your best defenders out wide as well. And you can't have both. It's kind of tricky. I don't know. It's one of those things, I guess. And Araujo is just, he is the only one with pace, the only one who can actually win those one versus one duels. The rest of our backline and generally players, they mostly need to anticipate much better. They have to stop attacks before they happen, essentially.
Yeah, it's a good point. And for me, Araujo is a stud, right? Like you said, the speed, he doesn't cause ticky-tack fouls for no reason, because he's always in position. He's so physical. I mean, how many times against Benfica was he able to muscle that guy off the ball? I mean, Eric Garcia is not doing that. And so those are the things. I mean, like I said, this is such a tricky thing, because like you said, like if you put Araujo on the right, we lose something maybe in the middle where – against corner kicks, against, you know, pace of play, these type of things. But I think ultimately he's a better fit in the three-back system on the right. Let's talk about Eric Garcia. Again, I'm still on the fence about this, because I see a little bit of the potential there, but I still can't get over he was in the EPL, right? Like, I don't get how he gets so outmanned and out-physicaled against these players and doesn't anticipate the physicality. I don't get it. What do you see with Eric Garcia? Do you like him in the back, or what do you see? You know, help me out here.
Generally, yes, I do like him. The thing is, he's kind of a midfielder trapped in a center back position, something like that. I don't know. His on the ball abilities are obviously amazing. He is the type of progressor that Barca needs from the back line. But he's also the kind of player that will, just like Busquets, he will have to outthink his opposition, because if he gets into a physical duel or just, you know, a foot race, he's going to lose that most likely. So that's something that Xavi needs to, you know, work on with him, just individually, just try and make him understand or just read the game much better than he does now. Because when he does read it well, when he can anticipate attacks, he's good. He can snuff out attacks. He can defend. But as soon as you put him like in a one versus one duel, that's where he will struggle. And of course, in possession, he will be an asset. He always will be. And I think against Villarreal, he was used as a quasi midfielder anyway. He was always pushing forward, and that's what you get with the plus one rule. For example, if Villarreal are pressing with just two players, and you can have Alba deeper on the left side, that means that Garcia doesn't have to stay deep. He can move up into the midfield. And that's kind of where you get the most out of him, because he can use his passing to kind of find targets up front and in dangerous positions. So maybe, I don't know, maybe he could transition into a midfielder. But then again, is he good enough to displace any of the other midfielders? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't see that. Maybe, you know, like maybe if we need him for a Copa del Rey match, you know, for something like this as a midfielder like that, I could totally see that. But no, he would not displace. And that's the thing is that, you know, we're still waiting for Pedri to come back, you know, and I think that's really going to help with the depth. But I mean, again, I still can't get over that all of a sudden we just plug and play. Like, for example, Abde comes in. And man, like, it's incredible the talent that we have in our La Masia, right? This ability to just bring players off the bench like this. Really quick, I just have some other quick thoughts about the attack. Now, on Twitter, people were just kind of asking, putting the question out there, what if you substitute Memphis for Dembele at the end of the game and just have Dembele playing up the middle? Is that, would that interest you at all? Or is that you're completely against that? I can see your face and you are not looking very satisfied with this type of... Just to throw something out there, you know? Just to throw out there.
I think we've seen that once. What game was it? It was last season. I don't remember the game, but I know that Dembele has played as a center forward once. And it worked quite well because he was always kind of pinning the back line. He was on their shoulder constantly and he would make those runs, which is good, but I just don't think that he has the technical and, you know, in tight space. He won't be able to hold play and, you know, do those layoffs, and he doesn't have the regular number 9 skill set. He can make runs, of course, he can dribble, but the center forwards usually quite tightly marked, and they can be in the center. You don't have as much space as he would probably have isolated out wide. I don't know. It's a tricky one.
What about this idea? You know, obviously we always think that putting Dembele out wide on the 1v1 area, but what about especially in the last 10 minutes to maybe put Memphis and Dembele together as a pair up the middle? Maybe that might do something to break it up, because, you know, the thing is, obviously you always have the outlet with Dembele on the right side, right? You have that, but what is the conversion rate of him cutting through the middle, right? As opposed to going up the middle and maybe having a better chance at a shot. The thing is, he scares the defense to death, right? They give him the space, but how many times does he make the bad pass? How many times does he lose the ball, right? And as opposed to maybe if he's with pairing closer to Memphis, maybe they can do more interchange. And all of a sudden, you can really put that defense on its heels up the middle. And maybe you have an error like what happened with Memphis last night. And then Dembele can shoot with both feet. It's just, you know, something to close out the last 10 minutes to give the other defense something to think about. But again, I think, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive, right? Because you want to put Dembele more into space into the right side. But, you know, maybe in these last 10 minutes, you know, because I remember playing, the one thing that always scared me is speed. Always, because I was not fast. That was always the thing that scared me the most, right? And all of a sudden you have a world-class sprinter up the middle, and you have to be clinical by if a ball bounces, right? Like, it just brings into too much. And all of a sudden you have Memphis and Dembele up the middle. It could be tricky, especially as we saw last night in the Villarreal match, where we cannot win the possession game. And that's how we got the goal, was just being more aggressive on those things. I don't know. It's just an idea I'm just thinking, especially since we don't have Ansu right now.
Right.
We can't have a true three back. So, you know, I'm trying to always workshop this type of things when I watch the matches, because, like, I love to be the manager, right? I love to, like, put these things in. So I don't know what your thoughts on Memphis and Dembele being as the 2-4 system for the last 10 minutes of the match. That's it.
Right. Well, I think it's worth a shot. You can experiment with that. But I think that in that situation, you would probably have Memphis a bit deeper. He would be like, so you remember how we had Messi and, I don't know, Griezmann, for example, in the forward line, then one of them would be kind of deeper and the other one would make runs. And that's kind of the ideal situation. That's how Atletico Madrid used Griezmann as well, for example, with Costa. And one would go deeper, one would go the opposite direction and make runs. And that's how we would essentially have to use Dembele and Memphis. Memphis would drop deeper and drag markers, and Dembele would get the space and isolation that he needs down the middle and then run and get the ball. I think it could work. Maybe it is something that Xavi could experiment with. I don't think so, because he loves the wingers. He loves that. So I don't see it happening, but maybe, I mean, there is potential in that.
I mean, just, you know, yes, it's not a typical 2-forward system. Like you said, usually you have like, you know, when I think of, you know, a 4-4-2 like forward system, I think of Diego Costa and Griezmann, for example, where you have the physical guy pushing the line, and then you have the guy behind him making the play make. But
exactly,
in this idea, you could have Memphis pushing. Imagine De Jong pushing, driving the play up the middle, and all of a sudden you have Memphis and Dembele crisscrossing. Like, wow, yeah, that's delicious for me. Like,
it is.
You know, especially like the way – if we see – the progression of De Jong, like we see last night, where he was driving up the middle, making the pass to Memphis. Yeah. All of a sudden, like that to me gets me really excited, just of the possibilities of Memphis and Dembele. Again, as a caveat that Dembele has to be healthy for these matches, right?
Of course, we'll see if he stays at the club. That's kind of
that's the other thing. Point.
That's the other thing. Yeah, we'll see.
any other lasting impressions so far? The first three matches tactically. That I mean, you know, for me, it's one of the things I've noticed. Obviously, you know, they're being more fit. I would love to see a little bit more activity. I would love to see, you know, I think. One of the things when I vividly remember of Xavi, Iniesta, and Busquets is that Xavi, Iniesta played as four people as opposed to two, just the way they were able to interject all the time, right? And I think we are still kind of lacking that, especially with the – I mean, we're definitely look more on the front foot, but I think we need to get, like, especially Nico, I think, needs a little bit more come and show for the ball, more triangle often, because I think that will loosen up a lot of things, especially, like, for example, last night in the first 20 minutes when we had the you know, most of the possession.
Yeah. I think so, too. It was interesting to see that, you know, you could see De Jong and Busquets kind of had a double pivot, but yesterday was more like Nico and Busquets, where De Jong had the more advanced role. And I like that much more because it plays De Jong's strengths, and Nico is maybe more suited to... I mean, he can do that number eight role perfectly. He can drive forward as well. But I think that De Jong is kind of... He's wasted if he's not given the freedom to go forward and make those runs and make those passes. So... maybe that could be the thing that unlocks him, kind of give him that freedom and let Nico do the more supportive role to Busquets then again.
Yeah. And let's just tie it up with the three goals. Cause you know, obviously with De Jong coming up, he comes up off the, you know, coming up and rebounding the goal essentially. And at first I thought it was going to be, you know, offsides, but you know, thank God for VAR laser that it was not.
Yeah.
Again, you know, this is the thing is that to me, I think De Jong, and it's so funny to think this, that he's the elder statesman of the midfield and he's like 23 years old, you know, it's crazy to me. I still think he has so much potential because I just don't feel that he has had the right coaching to put him in the system. But again, you saw last night that they were more vertical. Jordi Alba actually took a shot on that thing. Yeah, that's when it actually started. But again, De Jong just following up on that rebound. Any thoughts on that goal?
I think that generally, I think that that was a big topic as well. Like, Barca don't have people who shoot as often. That's kind of the thing. And your point about Jordi Alba is also a good one because Alba has a nice shot. I mean, we've seen it a couple of times throughout the season. I think it was last season that he had some goals from outside the area too. It's generally speaking, just having runners and having someone aggressively attack the box, that's what we've been missing. And then if we cannot do that, just have someone just have a go. sometimes that helps. Sometimes that helps, and those rebounds can happen. If anything can happen, it's a big point.
Sometimes, especially with Barca, I think in the last years, just having the threat of the shot is dangerous enough because all of a sudden that loosens up the things with the defense. Again, I think the first, you know, the first goal for Villarreal was just again one of those things where it was a concentration lapse on the throw in, and again, not closing in on defense, and Villarreal just went through like Swiss cheese and it was just boom, 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 goal. And I was like, what just happened?
Exactly. And the thing is, I think Xavi has been working on that, kind of congesting the lines and making the players closer to each other, which is key when you want to counter press effectively. And when that falls apart, that was Barca's big issue for, you know, for years now, because they would press high and they were trying to counter press, but they were so disjointed and they left so much space between the lines that it was impossible. And a good team will always make use of that. They will always take advantage of it. And Villarreal, they have their issues and, you know, they've been struggling lately, but they are a good team. They have the quality to kind of play through you if you don't plug those holes immediately. And that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, normally this would have happened in the fifth minute. as opposed to maybe the 70th minute or so.
Yeah, I know,
you know, there's progression in that, but again, it's just one of those things where you know, they were stuck in mud essentially. It happened so quick, and the finish was brilliant. And then obviously the Memphis goal again. You know, I always remember when I used to play youth football, my mom used to always scream "hustle" to me all the time. I have vivid dreams of that. Hustle, Gabriel, hustle. And that goal for Memphis was just pure hustle. He was all there by himself. Really bad clearance by the defender. I don't know what he was thinking, but it was a gift, you know, to try to head the ball that far. It's like, again, sometimes I understand in the span of the game, you lose that lapse of concentration. And again, all he had to do was maybe clear it the other way, and this doesn't happen, but he goes the other way. Memphis is able to get position. And I wasn't sure if he was going to pass or shoot, and he kind of did a half pass, half shot.
He does that. I mean, he does most of the things so well, and then the final touch is kind of, he makes an extra touch, or he holds the ball for too long, and something happens, and then he misses a good opportunity. But generally speaking, I think he has that, and he has a nose for that. He can do well in those situations. And even against Benfica, he did everything right about just apart from the final thing, he just couldn't score that goal. But he did so many things well. And he can, you know, turn a defender. He can beat him one versus one. He can make the run. He can make something out of nothing in some situations. But then again, he just needs to be more lethal and decisive. And that's it, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? And the thing I also like, as we talked before last time, was Xavi's communication style. And I think it was clear, you know, when Memphis missed the opportunity, he didn't like yell, right? He didn't go, "Oh my God," like, and throw his hands up like Mourinho style, but was like more positive. And those are like little things where, you know, Xavi knows how hard it is to score, right? And I think we kind of lose track of that. I mean, we've seen in the last matches, it's hard to score when you're not the best team in the world, you know? Just look at any other team, right?
Yeah.
Let's go to the last goal with Coutinho. Again, I'm not the biggest fan of Coutinho. Obviously, I don't think he ever should have came, but okay, he's on the team. He comes in, and if Xavi can get anything out of Coutinho, I mean, I'm on board, right? We, in our WhatsApp group for our Patreon community, they were all complimentary about Coutinho's. I mean, he just came in. He knew what he was doing. I think that's the key, right? And he created the penalty and converted the penalty. But Dom, one thing really quick. I cannot stand on penalty kicks when they do this run up.
Yeah, I know. It just makes me so nervous every time.
Correct. I'm just go up and hit it. Like, oh my gosh. But Coutinho converted, was able to get the score. But I don't know if you noticed, when they celebrated the goal, PK came into the circle while they were celebrating, and he was coaching them to not let up on concentration. The camera did a really great job, and he was just like telling the guys, blah, 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 blah. But again, Coutinho, if Xavi can get 10% out of Coutinho, look out. Look out.
It is. I mean, to be honest, when he was first bought, I was like, I was so excited because I thought, okay, this is a world-class player. He is. He really is. And I knew that there would be issues with him fitting in and, you know, kind of like having Messi's position and all that. But I was so excited, genuinely excited about Coutinho. And so I have a soft spot for him, but he is kind of, I don't know. I don't know how he gets ahead of anyone in this team. It's kind of difficult. In the form that our midfield is, I don't see him being a midfielder, really. And with Xavi just having, you know, so much emphasis on wingers and verticality, he doesn't fit that either. So it's difficult. We'll see.
Last week, I was watching some matches with a friend of mine, and I was like, I just wanted to remember what Coutinho did. So I did a deep dive on YouTube. And I couldn't grasp his true position because the goals that they had on his YouTube was on the left, the right, the middle. So again, I don't know how he fits into it. Maybe like he did last night, the last 10 minutes on the left side underneath Memphis. And that's good enough for me. But again, I can't get over the Abde thing. What a discovery, because now all of a sudden with Abde, Memphis and Ansu, like that's really exciting, right? I mean,
It is.
Again, last thing really quick before I let you go. The Busquets thing. Now, Busquets has played against Benfica and so forth. Yeah. Do you sit him at all? Because I remember Xavi saying that he was going to sit some of these older players, and we haven't seen it yet. And the thing is, I'm not saying that Busquets still can't play. I just want to see the youth more, you know? And I know there could be mistakes. I know there can be. But I just think the upside and the potential is better, because I think those youth players are going to take more risks forward. Because again, Busquets still doesn't. Again, Benfica, he had some great passes through, but I want more. I want more attacking. I want more verticality. And I think Busquets is still kind of stuck in that.
Well, I think it's difficult because when he's playing so well, and he obviously is at the moment, it's what it's difficult to bench him because you lose out on so much. And I don't know. I think maybe playing De Jong and Nico in the double pivot instead of, you know, De Jong and Busquets could work, and I would love to see that. That would be amazing, I think. But at the moment, when he's playing so well, and he is playing well because he, no one really threads those passes just like Busquets. It's just he is still at that. He is still very much the best. So I think at the moment it's difficult to see him benched, and I don't think that he should be really benched just for now. But moving forward, yes, I would love to see more courage from Xavi and kind of experimenting in that position a bit more.
Yeah. That's the thing. I just want a spot start, right? Yeah, like one here, one there. That's the only thing. I'm not saying that he needs to be benched for 10 games. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not.
Of course, yeah.
But it's funny. One of those things is that, you know, Xavi comes in and he just knows the security blanket, right? He just knows what to expect. And of course, that's what he's going to do. Well, the next match is going to be tricky. At least they have the whole week to recover. They play against Real Betis. Yeah. But again, this is going to be a complicated time. As we always say here, it's a 4:15 kickoff time, which here in Spain means siesta time. So we have to be careful with this match. Because always, I mean, if I could make a graph of the 4:15 times and how Barca performs, I guarantee it's not very good, right? Because it's here, it's so funny culturally how weird that is. But yes, 4:15 is like early here. It's a weird time. But anyway, I've linked your Substack in our notes. Again,
thank you,
Dom. This thing is amazing. It's one of my favorite reads now. I enjoy reading your tactical analysis. And, you know, again, thanks for joining me. We'll talk soon.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.